Thank you, Brother Andy, and good morning, brothers and sisters. This morning, I would like to talk to you about a man who was born into privilege. But rather than taking advantage of his privilege, he treated everyone as an equal. He was someone who talked to the common people, who listened when they spoke, who cared about their problems, and who dared to criticize the corrupt administration that wasn't meeting their needs. And people loved him for it. This was a man who, when he saw injustice, he righted it. When he saw a problem, he solved it. When things were moving too slowly, when things weren't getting done, he found a way to speed them up and get stuff done. This was a man who saw the government of his country was not working properly. The wheels of justice were just turning too slowly, if at all. And good, honest people, people with real, legitimate problems, people like you and me, they weren't being served. And he knew he had to do something. He himself had been slighted by this corrupt administration. He knew just how lousy their sense of justice was, and he knew that people could do better. He knew they needed something better, and he knew just the man to do it, which was, of course, himself. If there was anyone who could clear out the swamp, who could grease the wheels of justice, who could make it so that the government of his nation was truly representative, it was him. And if the government didn't want to go peacefully, well, the will of the people would prevail. He knew how to get things done. And this man I'm talking about, of course, is Absalom. And Absalom is the reason I want to talk to you this morning about due process. Because due process, if you're unfamiliar with the term, is the idea of letting the process of the legal system go through the right way. And that's not something Absalom did. Absalom was a vigilante. Absalom was the sort of guy who took the law into his own hands. When his brother Amnon raped his sister Tamar, the justice system in Israel didn't do anything about it. The king knew about it, he became angry, but nothing happened. And Absalom wasn't ready to just wait for this slow, miserable Israeli justice system to get something done. Absalom knew that Amnon was a rapist and something needed to be done about him, and so he went and killed him himself. Because that's what vigilantes do. They take the law into their own hands. They don't wait for due process. They don't wait for the system. They make sure that justice happens by doing it themselves. And sometimes this can seem like a good thing. When Absalom killed Amnon, people liked it. In fact, King David himself even liked the fact that Absalom had killed Amnon. That's what it says in 2 Samuel 13, verse 39, where it says, "The soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead." Absalom had just murdered Amnon, and yet David is like, "Well, I kind of like Absalom because I'm kind of happy Amnon's dead." And so the problem with vigilantes is not that they can never do something that's good, because sometimes they can do things that people like. The problem with vigilantes is that they can, just as well as they can do good, they can also do very, very bad things. Because with a vigilante, there's no due process. They just do whatever they think is just. And maybe sometimes what they think is just actually is just, but maybe sometimes it's not. So if the vigilante wants to kill a bad person, they go and kill that bad person, and that bad person is now dead. But if the vigilante wants to kill a good person, they go and kill that good person, and that good person is now dead, because there is no oversight. And the problem is when you kill somebody, you can't just bring them back. You can't go, "Oops, turns out new DNA evidence came out, and now this person turns out to be innocent after all." Well, they're dead. There's nothing you can do at that point. And that's why we, as a society, are actually very careful about killing people, because we don't really want to make a mistake that we can't undo. If you wreck somebody else's car, you can buy them another car, and it will be virtually the same car they had before. But you can't do that with people. You can't just be like, "Oh, here's another person, and it's the same person you had before." It doesn't work that way. And in fact, to be honest, in this country, we're pretty cautious even about things that don't involve killing people, because to locking someone up in jail for 20 years, it might not kill them, you can bring them out of jail, but it's still pretty harmful. And so while in movies and comic books and things, justice can see pretty cut and dry, "Oh, this bad person did this bad thing, so a superhero comes over and beats him up and justice is done," in real life, it's not always quite that simple. In fact, it's often quite messy. People can be fooled and lie. There are often multiple sides to a story. Sometimes it's not really just one person's fault. There's lots of people involved. And so if you're trying to actually achieve justice and figure out the truth of what's going on and what's right, it can be quite difficult. That's why we do things like call witnesses, but witnesses don't always tell the truth. So then they call multiple witnesses and they cross-examine them and they try and figure out what's actually going on here. Sometimes the subject matter is complicated, so you need to hear from an expert on the subject who explains, oh, this is the way this thing works. But then, is that expert right? Maybe you need to hear from another expert who has a different opinion of things, and maybe you need to do more inquiry. Oh, is this some other detail we need to know about? And this is why court cases can take years to solve, because there's a ton of details, and trying to get this all right, if you're going to be careful about it, is really hard. This is why we have, in the American justice system, we have trials, we have a prosecuting lawyer, we have a defense lawyer, we have a judge, we also have a jury, and this is a slow, careful process. And the reason why it's done slowly and carefully is because justice is hard, and so we try to be careful about it, because it's easy to get it wrong. An interesting example, I think, about this is how defense lawyers are often asked, how can they defend someone if they know that they're guilty? The answer, at least according to my law teacher back in high school, which I thought was reasonable, was that the job of the defense lawyer is not to figure out if somebody is guilty. That's the job of the judge, not the lawyer. The job of the lawyer is to defend that person. That's what they're hired to do, not to decide whether or not the person is guilty. The system works because it's full of checks and balances. So if everybody does their job, then the system should work because the defense lawyer defends the person, the prosecuting lawyer attacks the person, and the judge makes the decision about whether or not this person is guilty or innocent. And then to check the power of the judge, you then have a jury to actually make the decision on justice. And so there's all these checks and balances. But the defense lawyer isn't supposed to care whether the person's guilty or innocent, because that's not their job. That's for the judge to decide. Where you actually have real travesties of justice is when a defense lawyer decides, like a vigilante, that they are the judge, they know that their client is guilty, and so they're not going to try to defend him, because they know he's guilty. And this often actually happens in the U.S. Justice system, because public defenders aren't really working for their client, they're working for the state, and their real concern is to get as many cases through the system as possible, not to defend their client. And the easiest way to get a case through the system is to have the person plead guilty. So a lot of people in the U.S. justice system just end up pleading guilty because they were poor, they couldn't hire a lawyer themselves, so they used a public defender, and the public defender said, just plead guilty, because that's the quickest way for the public defender to get the case over with, and their job is just to get as many cases through the system as they possibly can. In Canada, we've got a slightly better system because rather than having public defenders, the state gives you like a voucher you can give to any lawyer, but it's still a hard system. And what I'm trying to say here is that if you take it into your own hands, if you decide, oh, I know this person's guilty, that's where injustice can end up happening, whether you're the defense lawyer, whether you're a vigilante on the street. If you don't follow the system, it's really easy to get injustice. And often it speeds things up. Vigilanteism is fast. When Absalom killed Amnon, Amnon was dead. There wasn't any need for a trial. He's gone, and there's no need for, like, appeals or anything either. He's dead. You can't bring him back anyway. So no need for an appeal. He's just gone. It's quick. It's fast. But it's not always justice. And the thing about Absalom is we can see from his behavior, this is the way he did everything. He didn't like to wait. In the chapter we read this morning, in 2 Samuel 14, verse 28, we have this sort of interesting, kind of trivial incident, but I think it just says a lot about the sort of person that Absalom was. So you may have noticed this towards the end of the chapter we were reading in 2 Samuel chapter 14, starting at verse 28, 2 Samuel 14, verse 28. So Absalom lived 2 full years in Jerusalem without coming into the king's presence. Then Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but Joab would not come to him. And he sent him a second time, but Joab would not come. Then he said to his servants, "See, Joab's field is next to him, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire." So Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and went to Absalom. So as you can see, Absalom knows how to get things done. Joab doesn't want to come. I know how to make Joab come. We're going to burn his field down. And what do you know? Joab came. And Absalom even got what he wanted. Absalom makes his case to Joab. Joab talks to the king. And then Absalom comes back into favor with the king. Absalom's a guy who gets stuff done. Sometimes things don't happen as fast as you want. And Absalom's gonna figure out a way to do it. And in this case, it probably wasn't that bad. Joab may have been a little bit annoyed. You notice that later, Joab is definitely not on Absalom's side. But Absalom does get the job done. But the problem, of course, is if you're the sort of person who's willing to burn down someone's field just to get them to answer your letter, then you're the sort of person who's probably willing to do worse things. And that's exactly what we see with Absalom. He's the sort of person who's willing to just kill someone if he thinks that they're not seeing justice. He's the sort of person who ends up raping David's wives because that seems to be the thing to do at the time. And he's the sort of person who ends up leading the entire nation in revolt against his father, King David, the Lord's anointed king, because that seems to be the best way to get things done in this country. And the problem, of course, is that it might have seemed to Absalom that this was the best way to get things done in Israel. But it didn't seem that way to God. Because the thing about David is David was God's anointed king. God actually had a system for deciding who the king was. And the system was not that the king is whoever kills the previous king. That was the system they sort of ended up in the nation of Israel later. But that's a lousy system and not the one God set in place. God has this system where whoever the king is who God anoints. And David was God's anointed king. And David understood this system. It was a system that had its problems. Sometimes you ended up with a lousy king in charge. For instance, there was this king named Saul, who was also God's anointed king. But Saul was not a great king. He was literally mentally unstable and was not a terribly great military leader and was doing his very best to kill David, also God's anointed king, and running around on this sort of wild goose chase, trying to take him out rather than serving as a king. But he was still God's anointed. God had created this system, and David, by contrast to Absalom, was going to follow due process. This is why we have incidents like in 1 Samuel 26, verse 7, where David is given the opportunity to kill Saul. David and his soldier, Abishai, also his cousin, nephew, I believe, Abishai, sneak into Saul's camp. I'm going to start reading at 1 Samuel 26, verse 7. So David and Abishai went to the army by night, and there lay Saul sleeping within the encampment with his spear stuck in the ground at his head, and Abner and the army lay around him. Then Abishai said to David, "God has given your enemy into your hand this day. Now please let me pin him to the earth with one stroke of the spear, and I will not strike him twice." But David said to Abishai, "Do not destroy him, for who can put out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" And David said, "As the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him, or his day will come to die, or he will go into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should put out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But take now the spear that is in his hand and the jar of water and let us go." Saul, in many ways, did deserve to die. Saul was a murderer. He had murdered all of God's priests. This was also self-defense. Saul was literally there because he was trying to kill David. But David didn't take advantage of any of that to say, "Oh, I am perfectly justified in killing Saul. And even though God's process might be different, I'm doing the right thing. I need to get rid of this wicked person." He didn't do that. He waited for God. Like it said, "As the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him, or his day will come to die, or he will die in battle and perish." But he wasn't going to do that because David's job was not to kill Saul. That was up to God. God was the person who anointed the king, and God was the person who could take away the king. But David was going to wait for God's process. He wasn't going to take it into his own hands. And that's often hard. David is doing this when he's on the run from Saul. If he'd killed Saul right there, it would have cleared up the problem immediately. He probably would have been able to become king afterwards. It would have made things happen quicker, and it might have made things happen easier, but it wouldn't have been right. It wouldn't have been following due process. And David was willing to wait for God's process, even though it was going to take a long time. It was still going to be years from that point before David became king. David was going to wait for God's way to do it. And in due time, with due process of time, Saul did die, and David did become king in his place. But David did not have Saul's blood on his hands. God was the one who removed Saul from being king. And God was the one who then set up David as king after him. And, of course, the problem that also comes when you try to do things Absalom's way, when you try to be a vigilante, when you try to do things that you think might be right, is you might think they might be right. Everyone around you might think it might be right. But if God doesn't think it's right, it still might not happen. The appeal of vigilanteism is, oh, I can just go do it and it'll be done and it'll be over with and easy and finished. But if God doesn't want it to happen, that still might not work. Absalom convinced a lot of people in Israel that David needed to be taken out and Absalom needed to be king. But Absalom hadn't convinced God of this. And when Absalom tried to kill David and take over as king, he failed. Because ultimately, God was the one who had anointed David as king, and God was going to make sure David stayed king. Absalom might have been a man who got things done, but eventually he wasn't going to be able to beat God. All of Absalom's strategies, his popularity, all his good looks, and his smooth words counted for nothing in the long run, because he wasn't doing things God's way. And David, by contrast, did things God's way, and it took a long time, much longer than David might have wanted, but David ended up being king. David is someone who followed due process, waited for God's timing, and ended up achieving victory. And of course, another person, a son of David, who did the same thing that we're here to remember this morning, is Jesus Christ. Because Jesus Christ is someone else who could have taken the law into his own hands. Jesus had a lot of power. He tells his disciples he could have instantly summoned 12 legions of angels to his side. Jesus could have literally taken over the world and righted all the wrong things that he saw going on around him. He had the power to do that, and he chose not to. That's actually exactly what Jesus' temptations in the wilderness were about. He'd just been given a huge amount of power. You could take over the world, Jesus, and he chose not to. Not because he didn't have the power, but because it wasn't God's way. God did have a plan for him to take over the world, but it wasn't a plan for him to do it then and in that way. He was going to follow God's process rather than his own process. And because he followed God's process, not his own process, he not only saved himself, he saved all of us as well. And that is the example we, as disciples of Jesus Christ, need to follow. Because Absalom's example can be very appealing. Absalom got things done. And people really liked Absalom because he got things done. Absalom was somebody who was popular, who people looked up to as this is the way to do it. But ultimately, Absalom was a failure because he did things his way rather than God's way. And if we want to follow Jesus' example, we need to wait for God to do things God's way rather than our own way. It might take a lot longer. It might not be nearly as satisfying as going and doing it ourselves. And it might feel for a long time like nothing seems to be happening. But if we wait for God's justice, in the end, it will give much better results. And I'd like to finish by reading a passage from Philippians 2, which basically says exactly what I said in this exhortation. Philippians 2, starting at verse 3. Philippians 2, starting at verse 3. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father.